This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, sevillepodcast.com.
David Swanson joins me live in studio. He is an author, activist, speaker, online at davidswanson.org. You can also check out afterdowningstreet.org. His most recent book is Daybreak: Undoing the Imperial Presidency. David, how are you, sir?
Great to be here. Thanks. Yeah, first and only book, actually.
Well, there you go. But the first, and I'm sure there will be more.
Oh, yeah.
What do you have in mind? I mean, what's next?
If I could ever get done with selling this one and traveling all over the country, there are many more I would love to write.
What's one that you would really love to do?
Oh, jeez.
If you had somebody right now, I'll give you an advance to buy you some time to work on the book of your dreams. What is it? What do you spend the next few months writing?
There are a number of books I want to write about war and peace and how we're lied into wars and what wars really consist of and what we think about them that's not true and so forth. But then, you know, going on this book tour, you run into the same local problems in city after city around the country that you never hear about nationally. And you think, you know, somebody should write a book about that. You know, you go and talk to these peace activists and they're much more obsessed with how the local weapons company is destroying their groundwater and all their employees are coming home with cancer. And the state and local governments are funding these weapons companies, which are, you know, the national military. They're much more upset about that than they are about the national issues of war and peace. And they think it's unique to their city. And then you hear the exact same stuff with a different company on a different riverbank in the next city. And it's that kind of thing that you'd like somebody to tell the national story of.
Yeah, interesting. Now, you mentioned a book on war and peace, and I got a title for you, obviously, although I think somebody's used it probably, but War and Peace.
I think.
War and Peace. What do you mean when you say, when you talk about the real issues there and the truths behind the war and the misconceptions we have, what would be an example, you think?
Well, the most egregious recent example, of course, of being lied into a war was Iraq. But then there are people who think that's sort of unique. And there's hardly a war that we weren't misled into. And we think of war as something that's necessary, you know, or we needed war to destroy Nazism, or we needed war to end slavery. You know, when the rest of the hemisphere ended slavery just fine without a war, we didn't have to have a war. You need a war to end the British Empire, the war for independence. That's a noble war. And yet you didn't need that. And it wasn't the agenda of most of the working people. And the lies that we've been told to get us into world wars, to get us into the Spanish-American War, to get us into escalation in Vietnam, the lies they're telling us now about Iran, that to the incredible credit of the American people, we aren't buying yet, there's consistent patterns.
Remember the Maine, Gulf of Tonkin, all this stuff.
Yeah. Right, but the Maine we now know was blown up from inside. We know that now. The Lusitania, we found it, and it was full of weapons, right? I mean, these lies eventually come out. What was new and different with George W. Bush was that the lies were sort of instantly transparent. Everybody knew he was lying as he mouthed the words, and we had the official documents and minutes of meetings coming out within a couple of years.
Now, is that a sign that Americans are getting smarter when it comes to deciphering this kind of stuff, or that the leaders are getting sloppier and taking things for granted?
Americans were shamefully credulous in the run-up to attacking Iraq. And if it had been put to a public vote without some modifications in our system of communications, Americans would have voted us into a war. But if they had to come back and redo it every year, it would have lasted 1 year rather than six and counting because the lies came out and were exposed and the weapons not being there had a lot to do with that. But the American people did learn an incredible lesson because you've seen this marketing campaign for heightened tensions and bombings and wars with Iran for several years now. A couple of weeks ago, you saw the cover of Newsweek with the mushroom cloud and after Iran gets the bomb and all the fear-mongering. And we're drifting in the wrong direction, but still you have a majority of Americans saying, no, try again, not scared yet. And that's remarkable.
Yeah. But is there not reason to fear Iran with the bomb? And if so, why not?
Well, there's reason to fear anyone with a bomb. There's reason to fear us with a bomb. We've used them. We've got more of them than everybody else. And I certainly don't want Iran to have a bomb. The point is, it doesn't. It doesn't. And attacking and occupying the country to its left and the country to its right and threatening to attack it, and then refraining from attacking North Korea as soon as it gets a bomb, all of our behavior sends the wrong message to Iran. If Iran had any sanity, it would try to get a bomb. But if you want to discourage that, you don't heighten tensions further. You don't threaten attack. You don't threaten a proxy attack from Israel. You sit down and talk to them, which is actually happening now. Actually happening now. You actually have the executive branch of our government, which I love to bash, doing something right in a way, while our Congress is trying to impose killer sanctions on Iran at the same time, which is, you know, not a useful step.
Yeah. The thing I would have actually respected a leader who had said, look, Iran's very dangerous. We are the empire in the world. We need our troops here on the map. And let me draw you a picture. This is where we need them. Instead of all the hullabaloo that we got, that like they were selling us ice cream or a car or something, you know, and you could argue with this empire idea that we need our troops here, but that truly is, if you look at the map and where they have no intention of ever getting out of Afghanistan or Iraq. I mean, we're building the biggest, most expensive bases in the world there, and there was never any intention of taking them out, was there?
There still isn't. General Odierno makes clear we're going to stay in Iraq beyond 2011 unless we do something to change that plan. They're building bases that are like cities. And we elected a new Congress again to end the wars. We elected a president who said, I will end the wars. And the fine print was, I'll take two brigades out a month for 16 months. Here we are in month 10. Hasn't started yet. We now have more troops in the field when you combine Afghanistan with Iraq than we ever had with Bush and Cheney as co-presidents. We have a larger military budget than we ever had with Bush and Cheney or anyone else has ever had in the history of the universe. And we have bases in more countries. And we're putting bases in Colombia and Guam and South Korea. We're expanding the empire now more than ever under Bush and Cheney. This is not change anybody believed in. And the peace movement isn't talking about Iraq at all, is barely talking about Iran. And on Afghanistan, we're campaigning against an escalation of a war that a minute ago we opposed, the entire war, not the escalation. This is what happened in 07. We elected a new Congress to end the war in Iraq, and we immediately had a debate over whether they should escalate it, which, you know, we said, no, don't escalate it, and they did anyway. Now we elect again the best Congress and president we have to choose from to end these wars, and we don't talk about Iraq at all and the failure to withdraw, and we look at Afghanistan and say, let's not have an escalation. Let's oppose an escalation, which, of course, you've got to do. You've got to oppose the escalation, but not with the self-censorship that makes that the ultimate goal, where we don't say oppose the war itself, bring all the troops out, put in aid and diplomacy, because then the middle ground becomes, you know, an escalation half the size of the largest number anybody throws out. Just like on healthcare, you don't say single payer. You say, I want the public option. But then the compromise becomes a half a public option, right? The self-censorship is just not helpful.
We're talking with David Swanson online at davidswanson.org. His new book is Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency. I wanted to get your thoughts on healthcare, but I also want to ask you about President Obama. He's running for office. The liberals like yourself are very happy. Finally hear somebody, and I don't want to speak for you, but finally hear somebody who I agree with on all of these things and is going to get in there and make great change. The Republicans running against him say he's the most liberal member in the history of the Senate. He's got this dangerous liberal agenda. But right now, neither of them are very happy. The liberals aren't happy with Obama. The Republicans aren't happy with Obama. What's your take?
I voted for him because the other guy was a little bit worse. I never expected much of him. On most issues, he never promised anything very good. On some things, he did, and he's broken a lot of promises. He's broken promises on transparency, on NAFTA, on signing statements, and so forth. But he promised to escalate Afghanistan. He promised to enlarge the military. And now, at that point, the American public was with him. Now, the American public's turned against Afghanistan, and you're supposed to obey the public, not where they were a year ago. But you can't expect much of an election. you certainly can't expect much of an election of an executive. Our work as citizens begins the day after an election, and our focus has to be on the House of Representatives, where we have some potential to influence some people. I mean, that's the way it's been for 230 years, and this royal obsession with the president and his family is just not helpful. The expectations and the subsequent disappointment, I would just skip all of that. Focus on forcing through Congress what we have to force through Congress.
Which is?
Well, in terms of presidential powers, you know, Bush and Cheney took the power to make laws, signing statements, executive orders, secret memos, legalizing crimes, the power to make war, the power to spend money, the power to make treaties, the power to detain without charge and rendition and torture and so on. And you couldn't expect a president to give back those powers. And the current president is not giving back those powers.
All the powers that the Constitution gives to Congress.
Yes. The Constitution gives most powers to Congress, gives the president a little bit of power. He can make a treaty, but he has to get Congress to ratify it. The treaty we're operating on in Iraq has never been run by our Congress. The president can make proposals. The president can veto bills. The president can be the commander-in-chief of a war authorized and funded and declared by Congress. But that's it. A president is not supposed to make laws by rewriting them, by dictating them, by having a lawyer write a secret memo saying you can torture this guy, that'll be legal. Congress is supposed to make the laws. And if Congress is going to take back any of these powers and then represent our majority opinion on them, we're going to have to force them kicking and screaming because they don't want power. And the way to do that has got to be to apply the two checking powers against the executive branch that Congress has, the subpoena and impeachment. And we impeached a judge earlier this year for groping people, which I'm not applauding, groping people. But you have a judge with a lifetime seat in the Ninth Circuit named Jay Bybee, B-Y-B-E-E, Jay Bybee. Go to impeachbybee.org, whose name is at the bottom of these memos, legalizing torture, legalizing aggressive war, legalizing any crime asked for so that he could get nominated to be a judge. And we won't impeach him because Fox News wouldn't like it. He's a former member of the executive branch, which is untouchable. Senator Leahy asks him to come in and testify. He says, no, got to golf that day. Sorry, do it without me. And the senator says, okay, because they're afraid even to subpoena. Right? Because the Justice Department won't enforce subpoenas anymore, and Congress won't enforce them itself. Hasn't done it in 75 years, doesn't even remember it can.
And the administration's not really pushing any of that because Obama's made it clear, I don't want to have any kind of witch hunt that looks into the past. We're focused on the future. We're not going to have big hearings looking into any alleged misdoings of the Bush administration.
The president has publicly forbidden the attorney general from going after the high officials. In fact, will only permit consideration of going after those who strayed from the illegal policies in the secret memos, further establishing that a president can tell a lawyer to legalize a crime with a secret memo. The current Justice Department is appealing and reappealing and reappealing any case that would reveal secrets about torture, about warrantless spying. They've threatened to cut off intelligence sharing with Great Britain if they reveal anything about the U.S. torture program. They have declared that phone companies are part of the executive branch of our government for purposes of keeping secrets. They are fighting the court decision that they have to release Dick Cheney's transcript of his FBI interview about his outing of Valerie Plame's secret identity and so forth. All of these incredible efforts to claim state secrets privileges beyond what Bush and Cheney ever dreamed of to protect the crimes of Bush and Cheney. And you say, wait a minute, that's the other team. Why would you fight all these outrageous claims for the secrecy to protect the other team? Well, if one team is the guys in power making the laws and the other team is the rest of us, then it makes perfect sense. And I think that's much closer to a real view.
Yeah, interesting. Not at all the kind of Obama that we were told before the election that we were going to have by either the left or the right.
Oh, Obama made wonderful, beautiful, far more eloquent speeches than I could about the outrageous unconstitutionality of some of these abuses, like signing statements. He would just never do it. And he stood as president in front of the Constitution in the National Archives and threw out habeas corpus, the one right given to us in the Constitution, and made it sound like he was defending our rights. He's a very good speaker. We get these announcements that, you know, I'll only use signing statements when I really have to, and I'll only claim state secrets to protect information when my lawyers have reviewed it, and I'll release the White House visitor logs, except those ones you wanted with the health industry people, except when national security dictates that I shouldn't. And so all of these things that sound like reforms, but they don't give an ounce of power to any branch of government other than the president. And whoever you are, you're not going to love every future president. And these powers are going to be fixed in place because Bush seized them, Obama kept them, nobody challenged it, and now the Supreme Court considers them presidential powers.
Yeah, and this land of the Constitution and the rule of law is closer to a king. I mean, I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. We call it a president, but it's much closer to a king than it ever has been in our history.
Oh, absolutely. It is. It's much, much closer. And with some people blindly accepting that, approving of it, people approving of it a year ago because a Republican was king, different people approving of it now because a Democrat is king, equally disastrous and dangerous perspectives. I as you know, I was going to do this show a couple days ago, but I had a call for jury duty.
Yeah.
I go in there and they explain to me the beauties and wonders of our system where every American has the right to a trial by jury. And I'm thinking, did Jose Padilla get that? Did John Walker Lind get that? Is that it? You know, the stuff they tell us at tourist sites and high schools and elementary schools ain't true anymore. It's not the way. We don't have three branches. We have two parties. We don't have rights. We have privileges for those who are granted those privileges. We have seen dramatic changes, and we've got this superficial shift and change and hope, but we're still moving in the wrong direction.
David's new book is Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency. You can learn more online at davidswanson.org. Before we let you go, I'm curious, give me your take on this whole healthcare debate. I'm curious how you look at what's going on.
First of all, I'm not going to keep applauding Alan Grayson every day because he bashes the Republicans. The American public already knew that. We voted the Republicans out of power. They're irrelevant. The Democrats have complete power in the House and the Senate and the White House. If they choose to do nothing, that's on them. If they choose to do something, great. But the more progressive members in the House cut a bargain early on to say, we won't say single payer. We'll pretend the public option, whatever it may be, it's been very vague for a while, is our ideal. And when you do that, then you have to compromise down from there. So I'm a big fan of their recent shift in rhetoric to talking about Medicare for all, because people understand it and because it's more like single payer. The way they sold progressive groups and labor unions on the public option a year ago was to say it'll be huge. Everybody will move into it. Within a decade, it'll take us to a civilized system of single payer healthcare. Then they took it down until the president was telling Congress no more than 5% of Americans will ever get into it. It'll never hurt the budgets of any health insurance company and so forth. We'll continue with the massive waste to the point where you could have something they consider a public option tacked on to a massive bailout bill for health insurance companies that requires us to go buy outrageously overpriced health insurance that doesn't cover us when we get sick anyway.
And see, that's my concern, that the legislation we're going to see is like what we gave Wall Street. We gave them, you know, billions in money that they're now investing in China and using to pay their buddies' bonuses. And they're not using it to create new jobs in the States, and they're not using it to bail people out of, you know, who are upside down on their mortgage and help them stay in their homes. It's going to China.
Right.
And that's what I'm afraid that this healthcare legislation will end up being. It'll be some big type of bailout for the healthcare industry.
It looks likely to be. And if it strips out the amendment that Congressman Kucinich put in that would let states do single payer, if the public option doesn't amount to something immediate and substantial and actually public, then it's going to be worse than nothing. And it's going to be up to those members of the House who've committed to voting no on a bill that's worse than nothing to follow through on that commitment. Then we get a much better debate and a much better bill in round two. If they don't, if they cave in and vote yes on something they said they would vote no for, we can't expect very good legislation on any issue in the months ahead.
The website is davidswanson.org. The book is Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency. David, thank you for being here. I've enjoyed it.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.